Hey Boo, we're starting chapter 2 of Harry Potter and the Half-Blood Prince, called Spinner's End. Many miles away, the chilly mist that had pressed against the Prime Minister's windows drifted over a dirty river that wound between overgrown, rubbish-strewn banks. An intense chimney, relic of a disused mill, reared up, shadowy and ominous. There was no sound apart from the whisper of the black water, and no signs of life apart from a scrawny fox that had slunk down the bank to nose hopefully at some old fish and chips wrappings in the tall grass. But then, with a very faint pop, a slim hooded figure appeared out of thin air on the edge of the river. The fox froze, wary eyes fixed upon the strange new phenomenon. The figure seemed to take its bearings with a few moments, and then set off with light, quick strides, its long cloak rustling over the grass. With a second and louder pop, another hooded figure materialized. "Wait!" The harsh cry startled the fox, now crouching almost flat in the undergrowth. It leapt from its hiding place and up the bank. There was a flash of green light, a yelp, and the fox fell back to the ground, dead. The second figure turned over the animal with its toe. "Just a fox," said the woman's voice dismissively under the hood. I thought perhaps an oar. "Sissy, wait!" But her quarry, who had paused and looked back at the flash of light, was already scrambling up the bank the fox had just fallen down. "Sissy, Narcissa, listen to me!" The second woman caught the first and seized her arm, but the other wrenched it away. "Go back, Bella. You must listen to me. I've listened already. I've made my decision. Leave me alone." The woman named Narcissa gained the top of the bank, where a line of old railings separated the river from a narrow cobbled street. The other woman, Bella, followed at once. Side by side, they stood looking across the road at the rows and rows of dilapidated brick houses, their windows dull and blind in the darkness. "He lives here?" asked Bella in a voice of contempt. "Here, in this muggled dunghill, we must be the first of our kind ever to set foot." But Narcissa was not listening. She slipped through a gap in the rusty railings and was already hurrying across the road. "Sissy, wait!" Bella followed, her cloak streaming behind, and saw Narcissa darting through an alley between the houses into a second, almost identical street. Some of the street lamps were broken. The two women were running between patches of light and deep darkness. The pursuer caught up with her prey just as she turned another corner, this time succeeding in catching hold of her arm and swinging her around so they faced each other. "Sissy, you must not do this. You can't trust him."
"The Dark Lord trusts him, doesn't he?"
"The Dark Lord is, I believe, mistaken," Bella panted, and her eyes gleamed momentarily under her hood as she looked around to check they were indeed alone. "In any case, we were told not to speak of the plan to anyone. This is a betrayal of the Dark Lord's." "Let go, Bella," snarled Narcissa, and she drew a wand from behind her cloak, holding it threateningly in the other's face. Bella merely laughed. "Sissy, your own sister, you wouldn't." "There's nothing I wouldn't do any more," Narcissa breathed, a note of hysteria in her voice, and as she brought down the wand like a knife, there was another flash of light. Bella let go of her sister's arm as though burned. "Narcissa!" But Narcissa had rushed ahead. Rubbing her hand again, her pursuer followed again, keeping her distance as they moved deeper into the deserted labyrinth of brick houses. At last, Narcissa hurried up a street named Spinner's End, over which the towering mill chimney seemed to hover like a giant admonitory finger. Her footsteps echoed on the cobbles as she passed boarded and broken windows, until she reached the very last house where a dim light glimmered through the curtains in a downstairs room. She had knocked on the door before Bella, cursing under her breath, had caught up. Together they stood waiting, panting slightly, breathing in the smell of the dirty river that was carried to them on the night breeze. After a few seconds, they heard movement behind the door and it opened a crack. A sliver of a man could be seen looking out at them, a man with long black hair parted in curtains around a sallow face and black eyes. Narcissa threw back her hood.
She was so pale that she seemed to shine in the darkness, the long blonde hair streaming down her back gave her the look of a drowned person. "Narcissa," said the man, opening the door a little wider, so the light fell upon her and her sister, too. "What a pleasant surprise." "Severus," she said in a strained whisper, "may I speak to you? It's urgent." "But of course." He stood back to allow her to pass him into the house. Her still-hooded sister followed without invitation. "Snape," she said curtly as she passed him. "Bellatrix," he replied, his thin mouth curling into a slightly mocking smile as he closed the door with a snap behind him. They had stepped directly into a tiny sitting room which had the feeling of a dark padded cell. The walls were completely covered in books, most of them bound in old black or brown leather. A threadbare sofa, an old armchair, and a rickety table stood grouped together in a pool of dim light cast by a candle-filled lamp hung from the ceiling. The place had an air of neglect, as though it was not usually inhabited. Snape gestured Narcissa to the sofa. She threw off her cloak, cast it aside, and sat down, staring at her white and trembling hands clasped in her lap. Bellatrix lowered her hood more slowly. Dark as her sister was fair, with heavy, lidded eyes and a strong jaw, she did not take her gaze from Snape as she moved to stand behind Narcissa. "So, what can I do for you?" Snape asked, settling himself into the armchair opposite the two sisters. "We are alone, aren't we?" Narcissa asked quietly. "Yes, of course. Well, Wormtail's here, but we're not counting vermin, are we?" He pointed his wand at the wall of books behind him, and with a bang, a hidden door flew open, revealing a narrow staircase upon which a small man stood frozen. "As you have clearly realized, Wormtail, we have guests," said Snape lazily. The man crept hunchbacked down the last few steps and moved into the room. He had small watery eyes, a pointed nose, and wore an unpleasant simper. His left hand was caressing his right, which looked as though it was encased in a bright silver glove. "Narcissa," he said in a squeaky voice, "and Bellatrix, how charming." "Wormtail will get us drinks, if you'd like them," said Snape, "and then he will return to his bedroom." Wormtail winced as though Snape had thrown something at him. "I'm not your servant," he squeaked, avoiding Snape's eye. "Really, I was under the impression the Dark Lord placed you here to assist me." "To assist, yes, not to make you drinks and clean your house." "I had no idea, Wormtail, that you were craving more dangerous assignments," said Snape silkily. "This can easily be arranged. I shall speak to the Dark Lord."
"I can speak to him myself if I want."
"Of course you can," said Snape, sneering. "But in the meantime, bring us drinks. Some of the elf-made wine will do." Wormtail hesitated for a moment, looking as though he might argue, but then turned and headed through a second hidden door. They heard banging and a clinking of glasses. Within seconds, he was back, bearing a dusty bottle and three glasses upon a tray. He dropped these on the rickety table and scurried from their presence, slamming the book-covered door behind him. Snape poured out three glasses of blood-red wine and handed two of them to the sisters. Narcissa murmured a word of thanks while Bellatrix said nothing, but continued to glower at Snape. This did not seem to discompose him. On the contrary, he looked rather amused. "The Dark Lord," he said, raising his glass and draining it. The sisters copied him. Snape refilled their glasses. As Narcissa took her second drink, she said in a rush, "Severus, I'm sorry to come here like this, but I had to see you. I think you're the only one who can help me." Snape held up a hand to stop her, then pointed his wand again at the concealed staircase door. There was a loud bang and a squeal, followed by the sound of Wormtail scurrying back up the stairs. "My apologies," said Snape. "He's lately taken to listening at doors. I don't know what he means by it." "You were saying, Narcissa?" She took a great shuddering breath and started again. "Severus, I know I ought not to be here. I've been told to say nothing to anyone, but..."
"Then you ought to hold your tongue," snarled Bellatrix, "particularly in present company."
"Present company," repeated Snape sardonically. And what am I to understand by that, Bellatrix?
That I don't trust you, Snape, as you know very well.
Narcissa let out a sob. Let out a noise that might have been a dry sob, and covered her face with her hands.
Snape set his glass down upon the table and sat back again, his hands upon the arms of his chair, smiling into Bellatrix's glowering face.
Narcissa, I think we ought to hear what Bellatrix is bursting to say. It will save tedious interruptions.
Well, continue, Bellatrix, said Snape.
Why is it that you do not trust me?
100 reasons, she said loudly, striding out from behind the sofa to slam her glass down on the table.
Where to start? Where were you when the Dark Lord fell? Why did you never make any attempt to find him when he vanished? What have you been doing all these years you've lived in Dumbledore's pocket? Why did you stop the Dark Lord procuring the Sorcerer's Stone? Why did you not return at once when the Dark Lord was reborn? Where were you a few weeks ago when we battled to retrieve the prophecy for the Dark Lord? And why, Snape, is Harry Potter still alive when you have had him at your mercy for 5 years?
She paused, her chest rising and falling rapidly, the color high in her cheeks. Behind her, Narcissa sat motionless, her face still hidden in her hands.
Snape smiled.
Before I answer you, oh yes, Bellatrix, I am going to answer. You can carry my words back to the others who whisper behind my back and carry false tales of my treachery to the Dark Lord. Before I answer you, I say, let me ask a question in turn. Do you really think the Dark Lord has not asked me each and every one of these questions? And do you really think that, had I not been able to give satisfactory answers, would I be sitting here talking to you?
She hesitated.
I know he believes you, but...
You think he is mistaken, or that I somehow hoodwinked him? Fooled the Dark Lord, the greatest wizard, the most accomplished legilimens the world has ever seen?
Bellatrix said nothing, but looked, for the first time, a little discomfited.
Snape did not press the point.
He picked up his drink again, sipped it, and continued.
You know where I was when the Dark Lord fell. I was where he had ordered me to be, at Hogwarts School of Witchcraft and Wizardry, because he wished me to spy upon Albus Dumbledore. You know, I presume, that it was on the Dark Lord's orders I took up the post.
She nodded almost imperceptibly, and then opened her mouth, but Snape forestalled her.
You ask why I did not attempt to find him when he vanished.
For the same reasons that Avery, Yaxley, the Carrows, Greyback, Lucius, he inclined his head slightly toward Narcissa, and many others did not attempt to find him. I believed him finished. I was not proud of it. I was wrong, but there it is. If he had not forgiven we who lost faith at the time, he would have very few followers left.
He'd have me, said Bellatrix passionately. I, who spent many years in Azkaban for him.
Yes, indeed, most admirable, said Snape in a bored voice.
Of course you weren't a lot of use to him in prison, but the gesture was undoubtedly fine.
Gesture, she shrieked. In her fury, she looked slightly mad. While I endured the Dementors, you remained at Hogwarts, comfortably playing Dumbledore's pet.
Not quite, said Snape calmly. He wouldn't give me the Defense Against the Dark Arts job, you know. Seemed to think it might bring about a relapse. Tempt me into my old ways.
This was your sacrifice for the Dark Lord, not to teach your favorite subject? She jeered. Why did you stay there all that time, Snape, still spying on Dumbledore for a master you believe dead?
Hardly, said Snape. Although the Dark Lord is pleased, I never deserted my post. I had 16 years of information on Dumbledore to give him when he returned, a rather more useful welcome back present than an endless reminiscences of how unpleasant Azkaban is.
But you stayed.
Yes, Bellatrix, I stayed, said Snape, betraying a hint of impatience for the first time. I had a comfortable job that I preferred to a stint in Azkaban. They were rounding up the Death Eaters, you know. Dumbledore's protection kept me out of jail. It was most convenient, and I used it. Repeat, the Dark Lord does not complain that I stayed, so I do not see why you do.
I think you want to know next, he pressed on, a little more loudly, for Bellatrix showed every sign of interrupting. Why I stood between the Dark Lord and the Sorcerer's Stone.
That is easily answered. He did not know whether he could trust me. He thought, like you, I had turned from faithful Death Eater to Dumbledore's stooge. He was in a pitiable condition, very weak, sharing the body of a mediocre wizard. He did not dare reveal himself to a former ally, if that ally might turn him over to to Dumbledore or the Ministry. I deeply regret that he did not trust me. He would never have returned. He would have returned to power 3 years sooner. As it was, I only saw greedy and unworthy Quirrell attempting to steal the stone, and I admit I did all I could to thwart him. Bellatrix's mouth twisted as though she had taken an unpleasant dose of medicine. But you didn't return when he came back. Why didn't you fly back to him at once when he left, when you felt the dark mark burn? Correct. I returned 2 hours later. I returned on Dumbledore's orders. On Dumbledore's, she began, in tones of outrage. Think, said Snape, impatient again. Think, by waiting 2 hours, just 2 hours, I ensured I could remain a spy at Hogwarts. By allowing Dumbledore to think that I was only returning to the Dark Lord's side because I was ordered to, I've been able to pass information on Dumbledore and the Order of the Phoenix ever since. Consider, Bellatrix, the Dark Mark had been growing stronger for months. I knew he must be about to return, all the Death Eaters knew. I had plenty of time to think about what I wanted to do, to plan my next move, to escape like Karkaroff, didn't I? The Dark Lord's initial displeasure at my lateness vanished entirely, I assure you, when I explained I remained faithful, although Dumbledore thought I was his man. Yes, the Dark Lord thought I had left him forever, but he was wrong. But what use have you been, sneered Bellatrix? What useful information have we had from you? My information has been conveyed directly to the Dark Lord, said Snape. If he chooses not to share it with you. He shares everything with me, said Bellatrix, firing up at once. He calls me his most loyal, his most faithful. Does he? Said Snape, his voice delicately inflected to suggest his disbelief. Does he still, after the fiasco at the Ministry? That was not my fault, said Bellatrix, flushing. The Dark Lord has, in the past, entrusted me with his most precious. If Lucius hadn't... don't you dare blame my husband, said Narcissa, in a low and deadly voice, looking up at her sister. There is no point in apportioning blame, said Snape smoothly. What is done is done. But not by you, said Bellatrix furiously. No, you were once again absent while the rest of us ran dangers, were you not, Snape? My orders were to remain behind, said Snape. Perhaps you disagree with the Dark Lord. Perhaps you think that Dumbledore would not have noticed if I had joined forces with the Death Eaters to fight the Order of the Phoenix. And forgive me, you speak of dangers. You were facing 6 teenagers, were you not? They were joined, as you well know, by half the Order of the Phoenix before long, snarled Bellatrix. And while we are on the subject of the Order, you still claim you cannot reveal the whereabouts of their headquarters. I am not the secret keeper. I cannot speak the name of the place. You understand how the enchantment works, I think. The Dark Lord is satisfied with the information I have passed him on the Order. It has led, as perhaps you have guessed, to the recent capture and murder of Emmeline Vance, and it certainly helped dispose of Sirius Black, though I give you full credit for finishing him off. He inclined his head and toasted her. Her expression did not soften. You are avoiding my last question, Snape. Harry Potter. You could have killed him at any point in the past 5 years. You have not done it. Why? Have you discussed this matter with the Dark Lord? Said Snape. I'm asking you, Snape. If I had murdered Harry Potter, the Dark Lord could not have used his blood to regenerate, making him invincible. You claim you foresaw the use of the boy, she jeered. I do not claim it. I had no idea of his plans. I've already confessed I thought the Dark Lord dead. I'm merely trying to explain why the Dark Lord is not sorry that Potter survived, at least until a year ago. But why did you keep him alive? Have you not understood me? It was only Dumbledore's protection that was keeping me out of Azkaban. Do you disagree that murdering his favorite student might have turned him on me? But there was more to it than that. I should remind you that when Potter first arrived at Hogwarts, there were still many stories circulating about him. Rumors that he himself was a great dark wizard, which was how he had survived the Dark Lord's attack. Indeed, many of the Dark Lord's old followers thought Potter might be a standard around which we could all rally once more. I was curious, I admit it. I'm not at all inclined to murder him the moment he set foot in the castle. Of course, it became apparent to me very quickly he had no extraordinary talent at all. He has fought his way out of a number of tight corners by a simple combination of sheer luck and more talented friends. He is mediocre to the last degree, though as obnoxious and self-satisfied as was his father before him. I have done my utmost to have him thrown out of Hogwarts, where I believe he scarcely belongs. But kill him or allow him to be killed in front of me, I would have been a fool to risk it with Dumbledore close at hand. And through all this, we are supposed to believe that Dumbledore has never suspected you? Asked Bellatrix. He has no idea of your true allegiance. He trusts you implicitly still. I have played my part well, said Snape. And you overlook Dumbledore's greatest weakness. He has to believe the best of people. I spun him a tale of deepest remorse when I joined his staff, fresh from my Death Eater days, and he embraced me with open arms, though, as I say, never allowing me nearer the dark arts than he could help. Dumbledore has been a great wizard. Oh, yes, he has, for Bellatrix made a scathing noise. The Dark Lord acknowledges it. I am pleased to say, however, that Dumbledore is growing old. The duel with the Dark Lord last month shook him. He has since sustained a serious injury because his reactions are slower than they once were. But through all these years, he has never stopped trusting Severus Snape, and therein lies my great value to the Dark Lord. Bellatrix still looked unhappy, as though she appeared unsure how best to take advantage of Snape next. How best to attack Snape next. Taking advantage of her silence, Snape turned to her sister. Now, you came to ask me for help, Narcissa? And I think we'll stop there. I hope you like that, my sweet kitten boo. It's bedtime for the pup and bedtime for the kitten. Good night, beautiful. I love you so much. Super.